Hello there, everyone. Welcome back to another Mixed Faith Marriage Mastermind. I love these panels so much, and there's a lot of reasons. My first reason is very selfish because I get to hang out with Brooke and Suzette, and I just adore these women. They're awesome. And so just really quick, all three of us are coaches that are in our own mixed faith marriage and family. And we all have differing beliefs. I am an active believing member. Brooke no longer attends, and Suzette is an active non-believing member. So we have very different perspectives that are very unique. And as we're chatting, we always share our personal experiences, what has worked for us, what hasn't worked. And I want to point out that we are not perfect, even though we're coaching. On this topic, we are figuring this out right along there with you in the trenches. So hopefully this panel discussion gives you some support and recognizing that you are not alone. And I think another cool thing about this is hopefully we are modeling that we can be dear friends and come together on topics that we have different opinions on. So I think I get as much out of these panel discussions as anyone else. So, and we keep hearing great things from you guys that they're helpful. So we're just so happy to be here. Tonight we are going to be talking about Sundays. I don't know about you guys, but Sundays in a mixed faith marriage can be tricky at best. I remember there's that hymn, "Welcome, welcome, Sabbath morning, ere we rest from every care." And I wanted to literally like poke my eyes out. That song was just like, oh, this is the day that is my hardest day of the week and so stressful. And yeah, that I was not living that. So we want to talk to you about that today. So the first thing that we're going to talk about, well, do you guys have anything you want to say before we jump into our questions?
Jump on in.
Okay, let's do it. We're going all in. The first thing we want to talk about is how we have handled Sundays in our own families. And the first thing I want to let's talk about what has not worked, because I've got plenty of those stories. So who wants to go first?
You know, as I was sitting here thinking about what I'd written here, I realized I kind of had a narrow, like, I've only answered this question narrowly. I was thinking specifically along the lines of like kids for some reason. And I'm sitting here and I'm like, whoa, I could have, but we're gonna talk about kids. My angle is talking about kids and how to
Sure.
handle Sunday. And I think I probably honed in on that because that was probably the like sensitive part in our family. Like some of the other stuff wasn't so sensitive, but like what to do with the kids was one of like the first questions that came up with my faith transition. And it was one of like the most scary questions that we grappled with. So I'm just going to talk about that. And this is what didn't work because I know exactly what didn't work. Mandates, inflexibility, not being willing to revisit and readjust, bribes. These are all things that did not work, or creating some sort of rule that we that we were thinking would just last for years and years and apply equally to all of our children did not work.
I can say for us, we are currently in a state, a phase of things not working. So this was easy for me to speak to. So my husband works to at least 2 Sundays a month for his job. So I always before I took the kids, whether he was there or not, and then after my faith shift, my husband is very flexible. He's not rigid. So it was kind of like, well, I chose that we would go as a family on the weeks that he was there and that he wanted to go. And then those other weeks, he's okay with me choosing whether I want to go or take the kids or not. He's flexible. So currently, what we were doing is if dad wants to go to church, we all go. It's kind of what we do. And if he's not, then sometimes we go just a second hour because I help in the nursery. So sometimes I need to be there. Sometimes I don't. Sometimes we don't go. So, but what is not working is now I have a 15-year-old. 13-year-old. And I'm quickly learning that teenagers, if they don't want to do something, it's really hard to make them do something they don't want to do, like get up for 9 a.m. church. So it is currently not working. Our plan of, hey, we go on these Sundays and these other Sundays, sometimes we go, sometimes we don't, is there's a lot more pushback now on all the Sundays. Why do I have to do this? And a lot of grumbling. So it's, we're at a phase of this isn't working and we got to revisit. Like, I have a teenager now. I have a 15-year-old, almost 16, and maybe it's time to say, hey, like, you get to choose. It's totally up to you. So we have, my husband and I haven't had that conversation yet. Just busy summer, but it's one of those things that's kind of been slowly building and we need to kind of, okay, what's this? What are we going to do now? Because currently it is not working to make teenagers do anything that I would like them to do or that my husband liked them to do. So funny, surprising how that works.
Doesn't get any easier when they're adults either. Sorry to... Okay, well, I want to go back to when my kids were younger because mine are all older now. I've got 14, 20, and 22. But when my kids were little, and that was when my husband stopped going with us. And I don't know, have you guys ever seen the Norman Rockwell painting of, it's the wife taking her three kids to church and they're all dressed up to the nines and looking good. And dad is hiding behind the newspaper, like, so no one can see him. That was my family, literally every, other than my husband didn't smoke and the dad's smoking in this painting. But that was what it looked like. That I was very rigid. I would take my kids and it was like, we are going to church and dad's not going. So now it's my job and I've got to do it for all of us. And so I had so much blame and resentment. I remember one time when my 20-year-old was probably three, I got my kids all ready and I'm marching out and already mad before I even go to church. And my 2-year-old puked all over the pews before church even started. And it was just like, I was just exasperated. And luckily there were some cute little old men that were super kind and they're like, you go home. We've got this. We'll take care of this for you. But then I'd get home and I was furious. I didn't want to talk to my husband. I blamed him for everything. I blamed him for my son throwing up, which he had nothing to do with. And so then he'd be like, hey, how was church? And even on the weeks where it wasn't a disaster, I was just like, it was fine. And I would be so passive aggressive and I would isolate myself and I would just be mad all day long. And that was not fun for anyone. So that didn't work for us. Let's look at what are some of the things that have worked. So let's go back to that question.
You know, I'll talk about that. I want to add, I hate to do this, but I want to add something else that didn't work for me because it ties into what did. Something else that didn't work for me, and I noticed this right at the beginning, is when we were making a decision on whether the kids should stay or go, I found that I was watering down my preference, my desires, because I felt like I was like in the wrong, because I felt like I was the one rocking the boat, because I felt like I was already causing the problem. And that's like, so then I wasn't really communicating my true preferences or asking or advocating for what I really wanted, because I didn't feel like I had a right to do that. And I wanted to highlight that because that doesn't work. Like there's a cost you pay to showing up like that in your relationship. And it's something I had to work through and deal with, you know, over the years. And it's a tricky one to deal with because the programming I was working with was that I was the problem. Like I believed that just as much as my husband believed it. So that's something I just wanted to highlight, as it's like interwoven in this. And it can take a while to unpack. And as I was able to unpack it and then verbalize and vocalize more of what was important to me and what I wanted to be considered as we made this decision together on how to deal with Sundays and kid attendance, we got to the, I loved your story, Suzette, because I have a kid and she was not even close to a teenager, but our first rule was like, they go until they're 12. And then when they're 12, they can decide. Well, she like wrenched that tool, that rule, and just threw it out the window. And I remember just when she was not 12 and we're like, pause. Like, we have to reevaluate this rule. Like, we've got to like adjust because it worked for the older two, but her not working. And we had to like reevaluate and pivot. And it was like a combination of things. I had to be able to be more honest and transparent with what I was experiencing and what I wanted. We had to really be flexible and understand our children as individuals instead of trying to do some blanket mandate for everybody. And we had to pivot, like, you know, a year, two, 3 years in, we were still iterating this very actively. And it takes a, like, that's a lot of work. All of those steps are not insignificant. And so what really works is for us, letting kids run point on their own decisions, not like really watching the guilt and the pressure from the parents. Doesn't mean that we weren't offering points of views and ideas, but we really had to watch the tendency to come in and really like sort of like pressure, convince, coerce instead of just advise and consult. That's tricky too. So these are things that I saw in my own immediate family. So when you say what worked and what didn't work, it was, they were all sort of there working and not working simultaneously and in parallel. And a lot of times we sort of had to explore what wasn't working before we could even identify and get to what would work for us.
I agree with a lot of those things, Brooke. What did work is when we each vocalized what mattered to us so that we could kind of compromise. What also worked was having a shared why, like a shared value of what we wanted the kids to get out of church that wasn't about belief. But for us, our shared why was like, there's community, it's good experiences being with people that they might not normally associate with. It's, you know, they get the chance to do things like public speaking and, you know, it's just other like opportunity. So our why was it's just an opportunity for them to learn and grow in different ways. That was our shared why. It wasn't about belief. It's so that worked for us. Flexibility works for us because if you listen to our flexibility episode we did, my husband is just flexible. So that's a plus. Like last week we ditched church, all of us, and we went to the lake because my husband's been working so much and we go to the lake a lot in the summer and we just haven't gotten to. So he was like, you know, it was like shared family time was what mattered. And this was like our one day and it was a perfect lake day. So we just went to the lake. So flexibility worked, and you know, he's been flexible. Like there was a period where I wanted to take kids to other churches to explore, and we did that. And there was, you know, it's like season, making it kind of, again, not permanent decisions, like we're going to do this for a while, we're going to try this for a while. Those are all things that have worked to make it manageable as we try to navigate this always changing tricky thing.
For me, I think that, well, so that you were alluding to this, like figuring out your why, I had to figure out what was important to me about Sundays. And Sunday is really, it's the Sabbath, it's my day of rest, it's my day of worship. And that is important to me. And there's that phrase that we can delight in the Sabbath. And I remember thinking, this isn't delightful. This is terrible and horrible and so hard. So I had to figure out what was it about the Sabbath that was delightful and why it was important to me. And for me, I wanted to connect with God. I wanted to worship. I wanted to connect with my family. And I had to figure out what was going to help me do that. And Grant, my kids are older now. So I know this is tricky when your kids are small, but focusing on, instead of trying to change them, and as a, none of my kids have any interest in religion. So I currently go to church all by myself every week. And I had to focus on, you know, instead of trying to change them, focus on what's in my control. And that's just me. And, it was so easy. I spent so much time judging them for not living the religion, my religion. And the more I did that, the more I realized, okay, I'm not living my religion because I'm judging them and I'm shutting down at the end of the day and not talking to them. So focusing on how can I live my religion, just me outside of them, and differentiating and having that, that was a big thing for me, focusing on me feeling the spirit instead of trying to make them. That doesn't go very well when you're trying to make people feel the spirit. So that is, that was what was very helpful in my relationship. So let's talk about, why are Sundays, why are they so hard? Maybe it's just, I think maybe other people, it's not hard for them, but why do Sundays feel so hard in a mixed faith marriage?
I'll lead out here because I have some ideas on this. I think they feel hard because a lot of like hard emotions come up. I think that it's just, they just bubble to the surface on the weekend. And so like when I was thinking about like what I've heard some clients say. So if I have like a believing client, they might say things, I'm sorry, let's start with the non-believing. They might say things like, I'm not as important as the church to my spouse. You know, they don't care to hear about my experience or my point of view. So they're going to feel unappreciated. They're going to feel disrespected. They're going to feel isolated. They're going to feel alone. They think I'm lazy. They think I'm dangerous. They're going to feel hurt. Like these are like, why does Sunday feel hard? Because these are hard emotions to feel. And then I think of the clients who are believers. They tell me things like they betrayed me. Like there's some anger and hurt with that. They're hurting the kids. They're hurting me. How can they ignore the last 30 years? How can this be happening? Like, again, sadness and hurt and confusion and resistance to what's going on. Hard emotions. And then you put that in a 7-day cycle, right? Every Saturday night, it kicks in. And the next 24 hours, you're in this like thought feeling space of thinking this and feeling this. That's hard. That's hard. So when I start to see these cycles, like that's when I know that this is a helpful area to get some help to reframe, to process, to work through this so that you're not stuck on that like 7-day roller coaster. Like where, you know, every Saturday night, these escalate in volume and some internal radio playing in your head. This is where I think coaching or therapy can really help you to like take those thoughts, take those feelings, process, reframe, and not make Sundays so hard.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of emotion starting Saturday and into Sunday. But I think another reason why they're so hard is this: they contain all the ingredients that any couples struggle with. So allocation of resources, time is a very, very valuable resource, especially if you have little kids, if you have busy lives with teenagers, like time is limited. And so how we spend time on Sunday, how we allocate our time individually and as a family, that is something that all couples struggle with. That is very ridden with conflict for any couple. I also think not just allocation of resources, but the tension of the I and the we. Like church is important to me, but it's not important to you, or it's important to me to do other things on Sunday, but you want to go to church. And that tension of how do we have both an I and the we. I mean, those are things that all couples struggle with, all couples. These are just things. Oh, and expectation, managing expectations. That is huge. We all have expectations of what Sunday should be, what we want them to be, how they should be, what our family time should be, what church should look like. So it's managing expectations between two different people. That is a conflict for all couples. So managing expectations, allocation of resources, and the tension of the I and the we. And it's a perfect storm for all kinds of emotions, conflict. And so that's a huge reason why Sundays are so hard. Plus, we all come into it with, I have so many shoulds around Sunday. Like Sundays has been one of the stickiest things for my own deconstruction. I have got like a million shoulds of what Sunday should be. They should be special. They should be family time. They should be this. That I like, even still on Sundays, like I'm a mess, not even because of the church stuff, just because I'm trying to navigate within myself. Like, what do I want Sundays to be? Because I've had a whole lifetime of messaging, you know, from my family of origin and church culture about what Sunday should be. And I'm like trying to figure out, what do I think they should be that I want to, you know, it's messy, so messy.
Well, you guys took a lot of mine. So going to add on top of those, I think too, with the expectation, and I think I said this earlier, we expect our spouse to live how we are. So when my husband said he wanted to go skiing on Sunday, I was just like, well, it's the Sabbath. We don't go skiing on Sunday. And recognizing that, yeah, those expectations and putting them on other people that might not believe that. I had to recognize these are my beliefs. This is not what he believes. And that definitely took a bunch of work. Also, I think going back to that, those big emotions that you were talking about, Brooke, that was, for me, that was the day that I didn't like him because I was seeing him as the villain, and I didn't like me because I wasn't showing up as my best self. So it was like, oh, here we go again, week after week. And then I think another element too, is you have all this going on and then you feel like you're in a fishbowl because you're at church. It's like, what is everyone going to think of me? What do they think of our family? So much comparison, like, oh, here I am sitting by myself with my kids and look at that perfect family. So much comparison and just those big emotions. I don't think anyone really wants to cry in public, but those were some of my hardest days because it's just like all of a sudden you just feel like those emotions come up and you feel like you're having an ugly cry at church. I think I've had some of my best ugly cries at church. So those are some of the things why Sundays can feel hard. And I'm sure there's a lot of other ones as well that we haven't even thought about. So I want to get more specific and talk about, so between the three of us, we've talked to a lot of people about Sundays and some of the different issues. So I want to get more specific on those little, what are the parts, what are the components of Sundays? And we've talked a little bit about this, but let's talk a little bit more about, so church, either church attendance or not attending. What have you seen with your clients on what has worked for them?
I have something I want to mention about this. I was just talking to a client about this probably in the last week. And there's this pattern I see where the person who decides to step away from the church sort of does it in this like little step, little step, little step, little, like maybe the first step is they're like on their phone more during sacrament meeting. And then maybe they're like in the hallway class and then they're like skipping second hour. And then they're like skipping fast and testimony meeting. And then they're like going every other week. There's sort of this, like, they're sort of like slowly backing out. And I totally get why people do that. Like they're processing their own thing and they're like, it makes sense why people would do that. But looking at it from the other point of view of the spouse, sometimes what that can feel like is like they take a step and then maybe they're there for a while and the other spouse is like, okay, things have settled. Like we're like at a place where they're going to be okay. And then they take another step and it's like this like new sort of trauma happening, new sort of concern being raised. And then they like, it settles down. They're like, okay, we're going to be at a good place. This is where they're going to be. I'm okay with them here. And then they take another step back. Like, this is a tricky sort of impact on the relationship, this slow walk out. And again, I don't want to say there's anything wrong with it, but it can be helpful to just realize what's happening in the relationship with this sort of slow walk out. Is your spouse feeling like a new hurt, a new betrayal with every little step you're taking? Are you doing it? A lot of times spouses do it because they want to protect their spouse. They're like, well, I'm just going to slow walk this so that it's okay with them. And it ends up being harder on them, even though they think it's being easier on them. Like this is an area where I would not assume you know what's best for your spouse. This is an area where I would not assume like, know the best way to, I will just slow walk this so they're protected. If you need to slow walk it for your own transition and for your own work, great. Like communicate that with your spouse however you need to. But like if you're slow walking it because you think you're doing your spouse a favor, I would go to the primary source of that one and have a really honest conversation, because it might actually be turning into like a new betrayal at every step. like a new pain or hurt being like pulling the scab off at every step. And that can lead to a breach of trust. If you do that 5, 6, 7, 8 times in a row, that can be hard to heal from. And sometimes when we're in the faith transition, you're just, there's so much you're thinking and processing that sometimes we forget to look at their experience. And that's all I want to shine a light on here. Like, you do your faith transition the way you need to do it, but also maybe here and there, look at how this might be impacting them and watch your assumptions and watch if you think you're doing them a favor by doing it a certain way, because that's infantilizing them a little bit, because you know what's best for them and you know how they can handle it and you know what they can't handle. Like, they're an adult. Like, that's not for you to decide. Because you might be think you're being slow and gentle, but you might be torturing them.
Yeah. I agree with that completely. I think it's all about honest conversations. I think a lot of what I see work with couples around Sundays is when they really unpack what's at the root of this for them. Is it like, I don't feel like I'm prioritized? Like, I feel like you're putting more time and energy in the church than you're putting to me. Like, is that the root issue? Is the root issue like, I'm anxious about our kids' future if they don't go to church? Like, just needing to have these conversations. And sometimes you don't know what the root issue is, which is why, again, getting third party is really helpful. Getting professional help is so helpful to help guide the conversations to what the root is, and weed out all the surface stuff and really get down to the bottom of like, what is the hurt? What's going on? What's the fear? What's the anxiety? And then how can we address that as a couple? So that's when I see couples start to make progress, is when they really can kind of get below the weeds, get out of the weeds, and really get to the root issues and address them. And often it's very predictable. It's like, not feeling like I'm a priority. It's all the fear, you know, not feeling valued, being anxious about the future, like all those very normal human feelings, just getting to those, being able to discuss them, and then find, okay, well, how do we want to manage this as a couple to deal with this in a way that works for both of us?
And I would add that I know for me personally, and so many of the clients that I work with, a really important question that we can apply to any of these things we're going to talk about is, what am I making this mean about me? My spouse isn't here. My child isn't here. Getting honest. Well, I think people are going to think I'm a bad wife, or that I'm not a good disciple of Jesus Christ, or that I didn't teach my kids enough, or my husband, that we take things very personally and we think this is going to reflect on me. I think that's a really important question to ask with any of these. Okay, let's talk about Sunday dress, since we're talking about being at church. What have you seen with this with your clients?
I'll just say that this was something that I dealt with personally, because I just stopped caring. I went to other churches and saw that people just came in their normal clothes, and that was so nice. And then I stopped caring that if my kids wore tennis shoes with their shirt and tie, but my husband did. And so this isn't something I see as much with the couples that I work with. I think it's more just attendance. It's I think this is a smaller thing, but I think that the small things can add up and be significant. So yeah, but it's just talking about it, finding compromises, finding solutions, deciding in this moment what's more important to me, like having my way on this, or like, for me, it was like, yeah, this is not a huge deal. Fine, I'll go get the kids some Sunday shoes. Like, it's not a huge deal to me. Like, finding where you can give and take and be collaborative and compromise, and really getting clear on what does matter to me. Like, I could give and take on that. There's other issues that I won't give and take on because they matter a lot more to me. And I'll voice like, this matters to me. And my husband might have to give on some of those. So if they don't matter as much to him, you know, that's relationship. It's the constant give and take. And
I think sometimes this issue, people are like, it's like bugging them, but they can't justify why it's bugging or understand why it's bugging them. And I think sometimes because there's the element of like mental load and invisible labor tied in with like Sunday clothes, like it's a lot of work to
Yes.
have clothes that fit your kids, that look like they should, that, you know, fit in the budget, that are ironed or washed and prepared. Like, this is not a small task. And, you know, and then with the seasons changed, you know, like, here you need a summer outfit and a winter outfit. Like, the shoes, oh my God, the belts, like, it's not a small task. And I think sometimes there raises, like, the issue of, like, is it, who's doing this? And is it fair? Like, is this just being ignored? And because it's an invisible, often kind of labor, it's still very real. And a lot of times women disproportionately carry this. Like, Suzette's over there just like, yeah, it's no big deal if I went shopping. I'm like dying, because for me, it's a huge, like, I do not have time in my day to, like, and the mental load, like, I get for some people it's easier, but, like, for me, taking care of this for four kids is not a small task. You know, I work full time. It's like there, that's an ask. That's a significant ask. And I think that needs to be part of the conversation. Like, some, because people are like, it's not that big. It because it isn't that big of a deal to, like, buy shoes for your kids. But it is a big deal if you're already, like, overwhelmed with the mental load and the invisible labor, and you're already feeling like it's not fair how roles and the division of labor are happening in your marriage. And then you add this onto it. It can be like the straw that breaks the camel's back. You can start to lash out and get angry here, and it doesn't make sense in your brain, because you're like, why am I getting upset about, like, iron shirts and things like this? But a lot of times it's because we're not aware that maybe the problem isn't, was there an iron shirt or is there a dress that fits? Maybe the problem is inequality and how things are divided, lack of communication around who does what and when and how it's done. And it, like, just, again, going to the root, going a little bit deeper, like, this might not be about ties and dresses and hair. This might be about inequality, about feeling invisible, about feeling unappreciated, taking advantage of your spouse and their free labor. I mean, it can mean a lot of things like that.
Yeah. Can I just say even more, like, I think no matter what the topic is, whether it's church clothes or church attendance or how we keep the Sabbath day holy, no matter what it is or how we spend our Sunday time, it's just talking about what's going on with you and why you do or don't want to do that, and finding something workable that honors both people. I think that's the essence of any of these topics, is we got to find something that works for both of us. It can't be a win-lose, you know, give and take isn't a win-lose. It's, but there can be winning and losing, and there can be kind of giving and take, because I really, you know, if you really don't have something that bothers you about it. But yeah, I think it's just having these hard conversations, talking a lot about all these things that are going on internally with all these topics.
And I would add to that, I think it's important to pick your battles. I'm saying this in hindsight. I remember there was a time where my daughter came down and she had pants on, and I was like, or, you know, my sons would come out in jeans and I'd be like, we don't wear that to church. And the battles that that caused. And now when I, looking back, I wish I would have just said, you know what, if you are willing to go, or if you want to go, I'm just so glad you're here, because I really don't think God cares what you're wearing. I had a friend that her daughter, you know, she was like, oh, I'm trying to get her to wear a dress and stuff. And I'm like, is that really a battle? Do you want her here? Or what do you want the end result to be? And is this the hill that you want to die on? Because I know for me, it just caused a wedge and disconnection when I focused on that. So, okay. What about, let's move on with two kids wanting to stay with the other parent. So maybe you're the non-believing and your kid wants to go to church, or you're the believing and your kid doesn't want to go to church. What are some things that with that?
This is a really hard place to be, because a lot of times one parent will feel unloved or rejected or outplayed. It's tough like that. I think a lot of times this is where we need to check our own parenting. Like, are we making our kids' decisions mean something about us as individuals? Are we making our kids' decisions mean something about us as parents and our ability to parent or our success as a parent? And when we can decouple our kids' decisions from our identity and our personal like sense of worth, I think that can be a really important piece here. Because when those are coupled up and we're like, well, if they don't do this, then I'm a failure or I'm failing, that's tough. And I think this is where like checking the bribes and the pressure and the shame and the guilt, because a lot of times when it's hooked into our personal identity and what we consider success as a parent, I think that's a lot of times when we tend to do these less helpful parenting tactics of the bribes and the pressure and the shame of the guilt, because we're fighting for our own sense of value as a parent instead of parenting.
I think, Brooke, that was the very thing that when I was introduced to coaching that got me, because I felt like I was a total failure as a mom because my kids weren't going, my husband wasn't going. I was the young woman's president, and it's like, I'm such a failure. Hold on a minute. I am doing my best as a mom. I can be a fantastic mom and not have my kids' behavior and their results have anything to do with my success as a parent. That was a huge thing that got that. That's why I fell in love with coaching, was that very concept. Okay. Sorry, Suzette, I jumped in.
No, that was great. I think it a lot of it too depends on how old are your kids. If they're wanting to stay and they're in their teenage years, that's a whole different conversation of at what point do we let our kids make these choices for themselves about their spirituality? If they're younger, you know, it's what are you doing? This is a parenting question. How are we parenting? Are we giving kids choice? Are we making a plan as a couple? And like, here's our plan. And or are we giving our kids full choice? And you might have very different parenting styles when it comes to that. But this is a parenting question. How are we parenting? How are we incorporating choice? How are we making decisions as a family? Are we letting the kids have a voice in that? Are we deciding for them? These are hard things that needs to be talked about. And like Brooke, you said earlier, these are not just one-time discussions that set the tone then for everything. It's like, for this season of life, how are we making this choice and how are we handling it? If kids say they don't want to go, is that an option for them based on their age? You know, or do we just validate them and say, yeah, that makes sense, but this is what we're doing today? Or, you know, how are we handling it? So these are conversations that have to be revisited with every season of life, with every, as kids grow, as they start to give pushback, and what are their reasons for not wanting to go? And what are they going to do if they stay home? And like, it's messy and it's complicated. And these are just things that have to be talked about, maybe very frequently.
I think that was one of when my kids were old enough, I think that was actually a relief for me, because I could just, I think what worked the best for me was just, okay, you guys, I am headed to church. Anyone that wants to join me is welcome to. This is where this is important to me, so I'm going. And then I would come home and then we would do things together after that. Okay, what about, I think this was the hardest thing for me, and maybe I'll start with this one. How do you treat those that are not choosing the way you do? So I personally would go to church and then I would come home and I was kind of a jerk. I had so many emotions, and then my husband would be like, hey, how was church? And I'd be like, it was fine. And then I'd get really passive aggressive and not talk to him. And I think one of the most, there was a talk by Sister Rooney in the last general conference, sorry, church lady, drawn in conference, where she talked about if we are standing there eating the fruit, how are we behaving? Are we standing there sobbing? And, you know, or are we showing the joy that we feel? And I had to recognize that I was not showing my people joy, because I would come home and I wasn't practicing any of the things that I had been learning at church. So going to that, like, what is my end goal? Who do I want to be? How do I want to show up? How do I want to live my life, because I did a terrible job of that. And luckily I've had some time to revisit that. So that was a hard thing for me.
I think a big part of it too is managing expectations with your kids. So how you, if you have expectations that Sundays should be a certain way, and then you're going to be resentful because they're doing the opposite. So your Sunday can't be the way you imagine it. Then it's about managing expectations with them, not just with your spouse, but like, hey, I have this expectation that Sundays should be, we should do things as a family. And when I see that you're not coming to church, that's hard for me. So how can we like still have family time or do whatever, even if you're not coming to church, or even though you are going to church and I'm not? Like, this is about talking about our expectations, making them explicit, and them communicating their expectations. You know, well, what I want Sundays to be is this. And I think that helps create respect so that we're not resentful and angry just because people are not doing what we would like them to do, is understanding that they have their own expectations. And working as this unit, like, how can we manage everyone's expectations so that we don't all end up just mad at each other and angry and resentful and being jerks to each other? This is all hard relationship stuff. Expectations are so hard in any relationship, and teenagers and kids have their own expectations too. And learning, respecting those, listening to them, modeling, hey, we can find something workable for both of us. Maybe I go to church, like you said, Brooke, or Chris, I go to church and then we come home and we do stuff, other stuff as a family. You know?
I think a lot of times when people don't choose the way we do, we get reactive. Like, we start reacting to our own emotions, our own fears, our own insecurities, our own judgments. Like, we're reactive. And a lot of times when we're reactive, we don't really like our behavior. Like, it's not the most like beautiful, proud, often not even in alignment with our own values. And I think a lot of times just like pausing and just like the question, how do I want to treat people who don't choose the way I do? Like, most people aren't going to be like, well, I want to throw mud at them. Like, no, like most of us are like, I want to love them. I want to like give support. I want them to like be part of my life. Like, most of us are definitely like, our values would speak to something like that. And I think that's where we want to be, but we have to be aware of what we're doing when we're reacting. Do we need to process some stuff? Because that's often when we're reacting, is we're not processing, we're not giving space for our emotional experience, we're ignoring it, we're shoving it down. And so I would say, like, this is usually a good opportunity if you don't like how you're showing up and you're being reactive, like, take care of yourself emotionally and then ask yourself what your values would have you do. And a lot of times once you work through the emotions, you easily know how you want to show up.
I love that. Yeah, so important to let yourself have those emotions. And then once they're through, okay, what do I want to do now? Who do I want to be? I love that. Okay, what about supporting family members? So this could be supporting them at church, like maybe they have a talk, or maybe it's supporting them, you know, how do we support the person that's not at church? What have you seen that's worked?
Yeah, I want to jump in on this because I don't go to primary programs and I don't go to talks ever. And sometimes I feel bad about that. Like, sometimes I'll like read something online and they'll be like, always go to your kids' primary programs. And I went to church and I hated it, but I wanted to support my kids. And I'm always like, am I a bad person? Like, it sort of catches me every once in a while. And I want to say this about that is parenting is not one size fits all. Like, some parents going to the primary program is like a beautiful, wonderful thing that they do. And for some parents, going to the primary program is totally not necessary to show up as a good parent. And so, like, you gotta, like, this is something I grapple with, is like watching other parents make decisions and letting that be okay for them, and letting me make decisions for how I show up as a parent and letting that be okay for me. Because I need to be balancing a lot of things. And my goals as a parent might be different than other people's goals as a parent. My interactions and what I value as a parent is probably different. So, like, for instance, for me, it's much more important that I have personal connection time with my kids than that I listen to them sing a song on Mother's Day. It's more important to me that like that I show up in these areas versus maybe showing up for a primary program. And I have to be honest with myself and be really clear like what my parenting priorities and goals are, and then make choices in alignment with that. And honestly, going to talks and primary programs and song singing, not part of that. But I do kind of notice the pull of guilt, and then I have to remind myself, like, I've made these decisions consciously, like for my executive functioning, good parent, like I'm doing okay. I don't need to beat myself up for something that works well for somebody else and that doesn't work well for me.
Yeah, it's to me, like, I think that summarizes what, like, the tension of the I and the we. What does our we look like in our family? It doesn't have to look like me showing up for these things. It could be me asking you how it went afterwards. You know, like for me personally, part of how I support my spouse is going and taking the kids. That works for me as part of our we, but other people's we might look different, and it might, like, they might create a we in a very different way. So it's that constant, like, experimenting and talking about, like, what is our we? How can we support each other and be a unified unit, regardless of whether I show up to watch a primary program or I write my kids talk? Like, how else can I support you? How else can I support the kids? How else can I be, like, we be this family unit? And I think there's so many ways to do it, and you can be creative. And I think that's part of the problem with Sundays is we have these, like, very ingrained messages of how it should look and how it should be to the family unit and family time and family spirituality, and really just shattering all that and creating something that works with your unique family. And there's lots of ways to do it. So, like, I'll just give a quick example. My son was assigned a primary talk. I don't enjoy that anymore, like helping them write talks. So I just used AI. I used ChatGTP and had it write a talk for my son and give it to my son. I'm like, yay me, I'm an awesome mom. So there we go. My son wants to do it. I helped him out, but yet I didn't have to expend any energy. I said, ChatGTP, write me an LDS primary talk that's like 3 minutes about this topic. It did it beautifully. It was perfect. So, and it worked for me. And yet I was still supporting my kid, but I didn't expend like an ounce of my like inner energy like on that, because it just doesn't, that wasn't important to me. So, little example.
I think another thing for me was recognizing how was I supporting him not at church. My husband's a big runner, and church is important to me, so I go. And there's a lot of times where I can go cheer him on at a race before church or after church, and recognizing, like, what am I doing to support him outside of church? That was a big thing for me. And just recognizing, you know, looking at that both ways, that there's support goes both ways. What does love look like in this situation for him? What does it look like for me? I love that. I love that question. Okay, let's talk about keeping the Sabbath day holy. We probably need to kind of combine some of these instead of going through all of them, but let's talk about keeping the Sabbath day holy.
I remember talking to a client about this thing, and they were like, birthdays, rock climbing, like, what do we do about this kind of stuff? Like one partner wanted to do it. One partner was like, that's not keeping the Sabbath day holy. And it was a tricky dynamic for them to work through. Like, what's off limits? What's okay as far as activities like this? This is what I'll say about that. These types of like deciding what your family is going to do regarding Sabbath day activities, I think a lot of times it boils down to, are you listening to your spouse? Are their ideas considered? Are you being listened to? Are your ideas considered? If you have a suggestion or an idea, or you want to make a change or implement a change, is that heard? Is there room to receive what you're saying in this relationship? I think a lot of times these issues aren't, do we go to birthday parties or do we climb rock walls or do we go to parks or ride bikes or swim? I think a lot of times these are issues of like, is there equality? Are we dismissing what the other person is saying? Are we listening? Are we inflexible? Like, I think a lot of it is these issues of, is this a relationship? When somebody brings something to the table, is it received? Is it considered? Or is it dismissed, ignored, and not validated as something to be considered and discussed? I think sometimes that is where the real pain and real like disintegration of a relationship can happen. If somebody's like, I really want to take the kids swimming, and it's just like, that's a bid. They want to have a discussion. And if it's just shot down, or it could go the other way. Like, I really want to take the kids to church, and I really want to have the Sabbath day. And if it's just completely shot down, it's like, that's, I think that piece is the most important piece to look at, as opposed to like, you know, do we do birthdays on Sunday? Like, how is the relationship managing people's opinions, their bids for discussion, their bids for, you know, reevaluating things? Is that shot down, or is that really considered?
And I think even outside of mixed faith marriages, Sundays are hard, I think, for even when both people are in, because of these things. Like, we live in a different generation than the one we grew up in. Like, there is, I mean, at least where I live, there's, if you want to be on a sports team, there's going to be Sunday stuff. If you want to be on any club team, there's going to be Sunday stuff. It's a different time. And I think we need to put away all the shoulds. Like, what did keeping the Sabbath day holy look like when I was younger, when I was growing up? And deal with the reality in front of us. How do we define it as a family? Or how do I define it for myself in today's landscape, which is very different. And it's, the landscape is always going to be changing, because that's just how life works. So the landscape is always changing. And how can I redefine what keeping the Sabbath day holy means to me in this situation? You know, it's hard. It's a hard thing to navigate and communicate about. And we might each have definitions, and, you know, it's tricky whether you're in, out, mixed faith or not. So, keeping the Sabbath day holy is a very subjective experience with a lot of kind of internal rules that we come to that maybe we haven't like reevaluated to see if we really need to keep those rules for the current situation.
I think for me with the Sabbath, that's my day of rest. And that has kind of changed over time, that, and I found what works best for me. It's, I want to have a day of resting from judgment of what I think my spouse should do, or a day of rest from blaming him, or a day of rest from wishing my family were different and fitting the mold. That was a big thing for me, that I can rest from all that and just set it down and go and focus on worshiping and getting what I want to out of church. Another thing that,
I love that, Chris. That's beautiful.
Pardon?
Can I just say, I love that. I just want to, that's really beautiful.
Oh, that, thank you. Another thing that I think has helped, you know, like, I personally, I don't go shopping on Sunday. I still have there are things that I do and I don't do on Sunday. But if my husband asks me, like, if I want to go, you know, like if he says, hey, let's go to lunch, or let's go do this, I used to say like, nope, I don't do that on Sunday. But now it's like, you know what, if he invites me to go do something, I value spending that time with him and connecting with him. So that makes that decision easier for me to say, yeah, I do want to go. I want to spend that time with you. And just looking at what is important to me on the Sabbath, that, well, it's my family and connecting, and that we, yeah, the whole sports thing. I live in Massachusetts and sports are on Sunday. And I used to, I kind of cringe now, but I used to be like, you know what, we don't do sports on Sundays. And then if my kids chose to, then I would go to church and I wouldn't go to their game. So I was keeping the Sabbath, and I'm putting that in quotes, but then I was sitting by myself at home reading my scriptures or whatever while my family was off doing other things. So for me, it worked better to that I do want to be that mom that goes and cheers at the game. I do. I go to church and then I support them in what's going on. And that won't work for everyone. I think that's one of the biggest things. You have to figure out what works best for you and your family. And it's not easy, as we've all said. Any last questions or other thoughts that you guys want to share, or anything else that you want to bring up?
You know, I've been thinking about, like, I really liked what you were saying about how you do Sunday as a day of rest, like, from judgment, like Suzette mentioned. I loved it too. And I was thinking, like, actually, I take Sunday as a day of rest. Like, I still subscribe to that idea, like, wholeheartedly. Like, I like staying home and resting. I think I find that that's really valuable to me. And I really enjoy that concept. And I'm going to adopt, like, not just resting my body, but also resting these things that you were mentioning. It's beautiful. Like, it's this beautiful idea of resting from judgment and resting from blame and resting from playing the victim and resting from my high expectations and shoulds and, like, resting from some of those things. I think it's, I've benefited from the physical rest, and I think I can benefit from this emotional rest you're describing.
I think one thing that's been really important for me that I've learned because of my husband's job. So he works in the emergency room. So he works evenings, weekends, holidays. So we, like, oftentimes don't, like, we don't celebrate Thanksgiving on Thanksgiving. Most of the time we celebrate it before or after Christmas, all because of his work schedule. And that's really helped me to learn how to kind of untie, like, intentional family time from Sundays or whatever day it is, the holiday. Like, you can be intentional about your family time, but it doesn't have to be on Sundays. It can be. And I think in the church that they've kind of linked, like, intentional family time and Sundays, like, go hand in hand. But they don't have to, and it's okay. You can have intent. We have intention, our intentional family time, which I think is really important. And the research shows it's important. I value a strong family. But it doesn't have to be so linked to Sunday and togetherness on all of Sunday and doing everything together and spirituality together. Like, a lot of times our intentional family time is when we're all together, which might be on a Tuesday night. And so, or like on a random Saturday morning, we go to breakfast. That's our intentional family time. And it's wonderful. And then Sundays, you know, everybody's doing their own thing and it's just a regular day, or we don't even have any family time on Sundays, it's okay. Like, I've learned to kind of disconnect that. And it's been really relieving for me to just kind of get rid of that pressure of Sundays should be something, something special, either spiritual or something togetherness, or, you know, just like, no, I can create that on a Tuesday for an hour, you know, like, and it's really nice to feel like I still have that regardless of what Sundays look like.
And I want to add, as we've all said several times, it can be so hard. I think it's so important to validate yourself, validate how you feel, validate the, you know, like, this is different than I imagined. And I think one of the most important things is compassion. I think compassion is one of the most beautiful things. Compassion for you, compassion for your partner, compassion for your kids. Like, I'm talking the Costco sized bag of compassion, a big old bag, you know, like the Costco chocolate chips. Let's have a big old bag of compassion that this is something that we're trying to work on and we're trying to figure this out, and just sprinkle that compassion on everyone involved in this situation. Okay, you guys, this has been another great discussion. I feel like I've learned a ton. Thank you for your thoughts and opinions and everything you've shared. And let's do it again next month.
Right. See
you then. Guys are awesome. Thank you.
Bye.